Okay, so get this. You hire someone for like a huge project on your property.
Right.
Like a $29,000 job. And they totally botch it. They just totally mess it up, leaving your land a mess.
Yeah.
You take them to court, and the judge says, just pay them $300.
Wow.
Sounds crazy, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what happened in this landmark case. PV House v. Garland Coal Mining Co.
PV House.
A 1962 Oklahoma case that is still making waves in contract law today.
It's a fascinating case because it really kind of gets to the heart of this question of should contracts always be enforced exactly as written, you know, even if it leads to a result that seems absurd? Or should courts have some flexibility to consider the bigger picture, you know, like preventing economic waste and things like that? It's a tough question.
Really tough. And that's what we're going to be diving deep into today in the PV House case. We're going to be looking at the facts of the case, the legal arguments, and why this case is still so relevant for anyone who deals with contracts today, especially our lawyer and law student listeners.
You know, it's just a classic example of how a seemingly straightforward contract dispute can turn into a legal nightmare.
Absolutely. So let's set the scene here. We are in Oklahoma, 1962. Willie and Lucille Peavy House, they lease their farm to Garland Coal for strip mining. Pretty standard deal, right?
Seems pretty standard.
Yeah.
But there's a catch. The lease includes a specific clause that requires Garland to restore the land after the mining's done.
Yep.
And this wasn't just like a casual agreement. This was something that was negotiated as part of the contract.
Right.
The PV houses, they clearly valued their land, and they wanted to ensure that it would be restored properly after the mining operation was completed.
So Garland Coal gets the coal, and then they decide to just skip the cleanup.
Yeah, basically.
They leave the PV houses' property and absolute mess.
Yeah, can you imagine the frustration?
Yeah.
You negotiate a specific provision in a contract and the other party just ignores it.
Total breach of trust.
Absolutely.
So the PV houses, they sue for breach of contract. Of course they do.
Right.
But here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
Remember that $29,000 restoration cost that we mentioned?
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that the damage to the property's market value was only about $300.
Huge difference.
Huge difference.
Yeah, no wonder this case became a legal battle.
Yeah, it's like, what? So you have this giant gap between the cost to fully restore the land, you know, as the contract says, and the actual decrease in the property's value.
Exactly. And the jury was obviously torn because they ended up awarding the PV houses $5,000.
Oh, wow.
Which tells you that they were trying to reconcile this, you know, huge cost difference with this clear breach of contract.
Right. It sounds like they wanted to give the PV houses some kind of fair outcome, but maybe they felt limited by the law.
Yeah, and they were, because Oklahoma law at the time limited damages to what's called the benefit of the bargain.
Benefit of the bargain, okay.
Which basically means you shouldn't get richer from a lawsuit than you would have been if the deal had just gone through as planned.
All right, okay, I got you. So we've got this broken contract, we've got this massive cost discrepancy, and we've got this legal system that seems to be putting some constraints on what the jury can actually do. Where do we go from here?
Well, this is where the concept of economic waste enters the picture.
Economic waste. So is that like leaving the lights on when you leave a room?
Not quite. It's a little different.
Right.
So the legal concept of economic waste applies when enforcing a contract would cost way more than it's actually worth.
Okay.
So, you know, like spending $29,000 to fix something that only decreased the property value by $300.
Right.
That's what would be considered economic waste.
I see. Okay. So basically the court had to figure out whether forcing Garland to fix the land would be a waste of money.
Exactly.
Right.
And the PV House case, you know, this case was so important, it was actually featured in the restatement of contracts.
Wow.
Which is a very influential guide for judges and lawyers. And it even specifically mentions this case when talking about economic waste.
So this case really went to the top, huh?
It did.
Okay, I can see why all the law students are still studying this. It's like, you know, a real life example of all these like theoretical legal ideas actually happening.
It definitely is. And to understand what the court decided, you know, we have to look at the different types of remedies that are available in contract law.
Okay, so let's break that down for our listeners. What are our options here?
So you have what's called cost to complete, which is pretty simple. It's the cost to actually fix the problem.
Right.
Like at $29,000 to restore the land in this case.
Right.
Then you have what's called diminished value.
Okay.
And that's the amount that the property value went down because of the breach of contract.
Okay, so that was only $300.
Exactly.
Got it.
So the court had to decide whether to order Garland Coal to actually restore the land.
Right.
Which would have cost them $29,000.
Yeah.
Or just give the PV houses the $300 for the diminished value of their property.
Oh, wow. Tough choice.
Yeah. And ultimately, they went with the diminished value.
Yep.
The PB houses only got $300, even though there was a clear breach of contract.
Wait, but the contract said they were supposed to restore the land.
I know, right?
Why didn't they have to do that?
So this is where it gets tricky. The court said there's a difference between what's called an incidental term and a fundamental term of a contract.
Okay.
Their logic was that the restoration clause was in the contract, yes, but it wasn't the main point of the deal.
Right.
The main purpose of the contract was for Garland Coal to mine coal.
So they're saying that fixing the land was like just a side thing, even though it was clearly important to the PB houses.
Yeah, basically.
That does seem kind of unfair.
You can definitely see why this decision has been debated ever since.
Yeah.
In fact, the dissenting judge in the case made a really strong argument.
What did they say?
They said a contract is a contract.
Right.
And you can't just pick and choose which parts to enforce.
Yeah, the contract.
Exactly. So it's like, what seems fair on the surface is that the PD houses should have gotten what they agreed to in the contract. But then the court decided something different based on all these legal ideas like preventing economic waste.
Right. Exactly. It's a real dilemma.
It really is. It shows how complicated this stuff can get.
It definitely does.
And, you know, this case isn't just some old legal story from the past. It's had a huge impact on contract law ever since, right?
Absolutely. It's had ripple effects, you could say, that continue to this day. The PV House case influenced the Uniform Commercial Code.
The UCC.
Yeah, the UCC, which governs tons of business transactions, especially when it comes to what buyers can do when a contract is breached.
Oh, wow. So PV House is still relevant even for businesses.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Think about it. This case is relevant to everything from construction projects that go wrong.
Right.
To disputes between buyers and sellers of goods.
I see.
It's a constant reminder that even the most carefully written contracts can have surprising consequences.
So what's the big takeaway here for our listeners, especially for those of you out there who are lawyers or law students? What should we learn from this case?
Well, I think PV House is like a masterclass in contract drafting.
Okay.
It shows how important it is to be super clear about what happens if one party doesn't do what they're supposed to, especially when it comes to specifying remedies.
Okay, so like spelling out exactly how you calculate damages if something goes wrong.
Exactly. You can use what's called a liquidated damages clause to decide ahead of time what amount of money should be paid if there's a breach of contract.
Smart.
Yeah, this can help avoid ambiguity and potential court battles down the road.
Yeah, because who wants to go to court?
Exactly. It's all about trying to prevent a PV house situation from happening again.
Right. Okay, so you want to make sure everything's clear from the beginning.
Absolutely. Avoiding vague language is crucial.
Yeah.
Anything that could be interpreted in different ways is just asking for trouble.
Right. You're just setting yourself up for a headache.
Exactly. So minimize the risk and set clear expectations right from the start.
Okay. So beyond the legal stuff, this case also brings up some ethical questions.
Yeah.
If a contract is broken, how do we decide what's fair to the person who was harmed?
Right.
While also considering the fact that we shouldn't have to spend a ton of money to fix something that might not be a huge problem.
Yeah. It's tough.
What are your thoughts on that?
That's a great point. And it's a debate that's still going on in law schools and courtrooms across the country.
I bet. And thinking about it with all the focus on the environment these days, I wonder how a court would rule on a case like this today.
That's a fascinating question. And we're going to dig into that a little bit more when we come back after a quick break. Welcome back to our deep dive into PV House v. Garland Coal. You know, we've been talking about this idea of whether a contract is always set in stone, even when the cost of fulfilling it seems way out of proportion to the damage that was actually done.
Right. And as we promised, we're going to kind of shift the gears a bit and explore how a case like this might play out in today's world with all the attention on environmental responsibility and holding corporations accountable.
It's a really interesting thought experiment to think about the PV House case happening now. You know, imagine the impact of social media with people all over the internet talking about it. Environmental groups filing all these legal briefs.
Oh, I can just see those satellite pictures of the strip lines plastered all over the internet. Garland Coal would be having a PR nightmare.
Oh, absolutely. Public pressure can be a powerful force. And, you know, it's definitely something that a modern court would have to consider. But we also can't forget about the legal principles at play. Would that economic waste doctrine still be as important?
Mm.
Or would environmental concerns kind of tip the scales? It's a tough question.
Yeah, it's like we're adding another layer of complexity to an already complicated case.
We are.
But, you know, it's important to remember that the legal system doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's always evolving and changing along with society's values.
You're exactly right. That's what makes studying law so fascinating. It's not just about memorizing a bunch of rules. It's about understanding how those rules are applied in the real world, which is always in flux.
Yeah, for sure. So if we were to imagine ourselves as the judge and jury in a modern-day PV House case, what kind of arguments do you think could be made?
Well, on one hand, you could argue that the original contract should be honored no matter the cost.
Right.
Because after all, Garland Cole did agree to restore the land, and a deal is a deal, right?
Ah.
It goes back to that basic principle of keeping promises.
Plus, you have to think about how the Peavy houses felt. They probably had an emotional connection to their land that goes beyond just its market value. I
Yeah.
mean, that was their home.
Exactly. And that's where the idea of subjective value comes in. How do you put a price tag on things like sentimental value or the history of a place that's been in a family for generations?
Yeah, it's hard to measure that.
It's really hard to quantify.
But then on the other hand, there's that argument that spending tons of money on restoration might not be the most practical or efficient approach,
Yeah.
especially if it's not going to make a big difference in the value of the property.
Right. And that's where we come back to that economic waste doctrine. Could those funds be used more effectively somewhere else? Maybe invest in renewable energy projects or create a conservation easement on a different piece of land? Those are some things to think about.
Yeah, it's almost like we're trying to balance doing right by the Peavy houses with using those resources to do something good for the environment as a whole.
That's a great way to put it. It's a tough call. And honestly, there's no easy answer.
Yeah.
But that's what's interesting about the law. It makes us deal with these complicated issues and try to find a balance that feels just off, even if it's not always a perfect solution.
So for our listeners who might be thinking, okay, this is interesting, but how does this apply to me? What are some key takeaways they should remember?
Well, first of all, I think this case shows how important it is to use clear and unambiguous language in your contracts. When you're talking about something as serious as land restoration, you need to be extremely specific about what needs to be done, how it'll be done, and who's going to pay for it.
That's like they say, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Spending some extra time up front to make sure your contract is rock solid can save you a lot of headaches and legal fees later on.
Exactly. And if you're not sure about any part of a contract, don't hesitate to talk to a lawyer.
Good advice.
A good lawyer can help you spot potential problems and make sure your interests are protected.
Right. Another thing that I think is important from this case is the power of negotiation. The Peavy houses obviously knew how important that restoration clause was. They didn't just accept whatever terms were offered, they fought for their own interests.
Absolutely. Don't be afraid to ask for what you want and to negotiate terms that work for you. That's all part of how business and legal transactions work.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's so important to remember that even small details in a contract can have big consequences down the line. The
Absolutely.
Peavy House case is like a perfect example of how just one little clause can turn into a huge legal fight.
Yeah, it's a reminder that contracts are serious business
Yeah.
and you need to treat them with respect.
Okay, so this case isn't just about the legal stuff. It brings up ethical questions too. Like, is it ever okay for a company to benefit from a contract but not do what they promised, even if it's technically legal?
That's a really thought-provoking question. It makes you think about corporate responsibility and doing what's right, even when the law might allow you to do something else. Yeah, it really makes you think about, like, what's a company's responsibility to do the right thing and to protect the environment, even when they might be able to get away with something else.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder if this case is just like the tip of the iceberg. I mean, how many other times have companies gotten away with breaking their promises because the legal system didn't do enough to protect the other side?
It's something to think about for sure. And it reminds us that the law is important, but it only works if people use it the right way. It's up to all of us to make sure that the law is used to create a fair system and not to let companies take advantage of people or harm the environment.
That's a really good point. I think this whole conversation has shown us just how complicated contract law can be and how cases like this one can have a big impact on society as a whole. But before we wrap things up, I want to turn it back to you, our listeners.
We've been spending all this time talking about this case, Peavy House v. Garland Cole, and it's really made us think about this big question. What happens when the law, which is supposed to make things fair and orderly, doesn't seem to do that?
Yeah, it's a question that's been around forever. And the Peavy House case is like a perfect example of that struggle. On the one hand, you have this idea that contracts have to be honored no matter what. It's called pacta sunt servanda.
Right, that agreements must be kept. It's like the foundation of contract law.
Exactly, because if we couldn't trust that contracts would be followed, the whole legal system would fall apart.
Yeah, it would be chaos.
Right, but then you have these situations like in the Peavey House case, where sticking to the contract exactly leads to a result that just doesn't seem fair or reasonable or even makes sense.
Right, like spending $29,000 to fix a $300 problem doesn't seem very logical.
Exactly. And that's where things get tricky. How do we balance the need for the law to be predictable and consistent with the desire for outcomes that just feel morally right?
Yeah, it's not an easy question to answer. I think it's important to remember that the law is made by people, and it's applied to real-life situations that are often messy and complicated. So there's not always going to be a perfect solution.
That makes sense. We can't expect a set of rules, no matter how well written they are, to cover every single possibility in human interactions.
Exactly. And that's why cases like Peavey House are still so important today. They force us to think about the limitations of the law and to find ways to make it more just and equitable for everyone.
So, for our listeners out there, what are some key takeaways from all of this? How can we apply these ideas to our own lives?
Well, I think one important takeaway is to be realistic when you're dealing with contracts, whether they're personal or professional. Of course, it's important to have things in writing and to be clear about what everyone expects.
Right, like we were saying before, use specific language and clearly define what happens if someone breaks the contract.
Exactly. But it's also important to remember that things don't always go as planned. And sometimes being too rigid about a contract can lead to a result that nobody wanted.
Right. It's like that saying, the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry.
Exactly. Sometimes things just happen. So maybe the real lesson from Peavey House is that it's important to be flexible to communicate and to be willing to compromise when things don't go exactly according to plan.
And maybe it's a reminder to check in with our own sense of fairness and justice when we're in these situations.
I agree, because ultimately the law is a tool. It's up to us to use it in a way that creates a more just and fair society for everyone.
Well said. I think this has been a really fascinating deep dive into the Peavey House case. We've explored not only the legal details, but also the bigger questions about contracts, fairness, and the role of law in our lives.
It's been a great discussion.
I hope you've enjoyed it and that it's given you some new insights into this landmark case and sparked some interesting conversations of your own. What do you think? Did the Peavey Houses get a fair outcome? Should saving money always be more important than following a contract? We want to hear from you. Share your thoughts with us on social media, and until next time, happy lawyering.